We have been enjoying fireworks for over 1,000 years. Seems like magic sometimes. We'll talk about that and talk about the 4th of July and the meaning of the 4th of July a little bit today, too, with Bassam Shakashiri. He is professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison, holds the William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea, and is in the studio with me today to talk about the 4th of July and how fireworks are made. And we'll talk about a few other science things as well. You may have some science questions. Join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And Bassam, always a pleasure.
I'm very happy to be in the studio with you, Larry. Always happy to be with your listening audience. I run into so many of them in different locations, not only in Wisconsin, but outside of Wisconsin, airports, train stations, conferences, and they always, you know, say to me, "Oh, I hear you on the radio. I know what you sound like." And so I say, "Do I sound the same in person?" They say, "Yes."
Well, you do. And, you know, we're going to talk about fireworks, but, you know, there's a reason for the celebration and for the fireworks, the 4th of July, our independence.
Independence Day is coming up. It is what we call in the United States the 4th of July. But you know, Larry, there's a 4th of July in every country. And but to us and for us, Independence Day has deep, beautiful meaning. And each one of us should think seriously about our country, think about the founders of our country, but think especially about the future of our country. One of the things that I always do around this time of the year is to look up the Declaration of Independence and read it. I also look up the Bill of Rights and also the Constitution. Those three documents are critical to what our country is and critical to all of us in what we do. We enjoy freedom unlike any other society in history. And so it is imperative that we pause, we reflect, and we converse with each other about the meaning of Independence Day. And that's what I'd like to ask people in the listening audience, if they would call in as they choose to. You know, they're free to call in, free not to call in, but they can to call in and tell us, what does Independence Day mean to them, and how does it relate to our current political situation domestically and internationally, and how do we celebrate it beyond, you know, fireworks and barbecue and brats and beer, swimming and other activities. I'm for all that, but it's critical that we think about Independence Day and the true meaning of it and what our society really is all about. I want to tell you, Larry, I've told you this before. Every time I return from international travel, I go down on my knees and give thanks for being in the United States. And that includes Canada.
Yeah.
I just came back from overseas travel this week, and I did that. I'm so grateful to be in the United States, so happy to be part of a society that champions freedom, that focuses on individual and collective development and promotes collective as well as individual responsibility. I'm very, very pleased to be a United States citizen. I was sworn in by the late Judge Doyle, the father of our former governor, in 1974 here in Madison. And among other things that he said to me and to others who were being sworn in, he said, and I'm quoting, "Enjoy your freedoms. Enjoy your freedoms." So to me, that's what the celebrations are about. And of course, we're going to talk about the science of fireworks. We're going to talk about all kinds of things that the callers would call in about. But I really would like to hear from some of the people in the listening audience as to what it means to them politically now and sociologically, culturally, to be marking the independence of the United States of America.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today. You may have a question or comment or maybe a thought about his question. about what the 4th of July, what our independence means to you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Actually, you presented me with a little pamphlet that is the American Trilogy, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights.
This is a document that was put together by UW-Madison about 15, 16 years ago. A very wonderful collection of the three documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. Of course, as we said already, the Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution, but it is culled out. And it is a set of documents to be read not only on Independence Day or the weekend of Independence Day, the weekend of the 4th of July, but to be read and for all of us to live what these documents say, and to promote freedom and liberty and to enjoy the wonderful society that we belong to.
And you you do some special things around this time. In addition to coming and talking with us here, you have a wonderful event every year. You've done it for a long time now. Science is Fun at the Union Terrace on July 2nd.
On Saturday, 2 days from today, around 8 o'clock in the evening, we will be discussing and presenting demonstrations about the science of fireworks. Mm-hmm. We will be joined by Mike LaCrone and members of the UW band and also Bucky Badger and a few other guests that are traveling from afar to be part of this program. We've been doing it now for several years. It's free and open to the general public. Bring your family members, bring your friends, bring the out-of-town guests. Come to the Union Terrace. It is being remodeled, but there's plenty of room for...
It's always a beautiful setting anyway,
it's
right?
It's a gorgeous
on Lake
setting.
Mendota? Oh, my goodness.
Gorgeous setting. And so we'll be doing science experiments, explaining... a few things about how fireworks work. We're not going to set off any fireworks, but we will use some of the ingredients that are used in setting off fireworks. And we'll do a few other experiments, too. And it'll be music and entertainment and science and joy. And it's going to be a grand evening on the shores of Lake Mendota at the Memorial Union Terrace, beginning around 8 o'clock. Day after tomorrow, July 2nd.
I'll have to bring Emily for that.
Please do. Please do.
Well, we have... What's the basic science behind fireworks?
Well, fireworks, you know, have different components. The main components are combustible materials, things that burn. Mm-hmm. Usually these are substances that contain oxygen in them, but there's also sulfur and carbon. So in fireworks, what we need is the carbon and sulfur to burn very rapidly, and we need to provide much more oxygen than is in the air to accomplish this process. So when you make fireworks, you add substances like potassium chlorate, which contain a lot more oxygen, and then when it's potassium chlorate decomposes, it releases this oxygen, and because it's mixed with the sulfur and the carbon, then these and there's a lot of heat, and these burn, and we get a lot of more heat released. Now the colors in the fireworks come from additional substances that are included in the mix. These ingredients differ from each other depending on what color you want. For example, if you want red, usually it's a substance that contains the element lithium, a compound of lithium. If you want green, it contains the element copper in the form of a compound. If you want, so there's a whole slew of different compounds that are put together. It's really an art, Larry, to put all these ingredients together.
It's gotta be.
And to put them together safely. So this is something that only professionals should be doing. Yeah. And I want to emphasize also that only professionals should be setting off fireworks. The spectacular displays that we see up in the sky are the results of huge reactions among the different components that I just mentioned, and they're designed in different shapes and different forms so that the combustion reaction takes place at the appropriate time. You don't want to have a premature explosion. You want the firework to go way up in the sky, and then you have a short fuse that's triggered, and it releases energy in the form of light, which is what we see. And depending on the ingredients that are in there, we see red, blue, yellow, purple, but also releases a lot of sound energy.
And how does it? How do they? You know, you'll see hearts shapes. You'll see all kinds of different shapes. Is it how they shape the firework?
The way it's put together.
Yeah.
It has different. So the different stages, and the final stage is the one that's results in the different images that we see.
Yeah.
That we see. Their hearts, their stars, all over the place.
Well, Barbara in Dodgeville has something for us. Barbara, hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you, Professor, for raising this subject of how much the 4th of July means to us as American citizens. My husband served 20 years in the U.S. Air Force. He is now retired, and our family was with him together in overseas assignments. And I just wanted to say that it meant so much to us on the 4th of July to stand up, hear our national anthem, and proclaim what America meant to us in front of our other NATO countries where we were stationed. We did this in England and Belgium and Germany over those years. You know, it started out with Vietnam from the University of Wisconsin graduation right from Vietnam and onward. To stand, especially in a foreign country, defending your country and say, I'm proud to be an American, and the 4th of July is important to me and to our family, means a great deal. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to say it.
Oh,
and thank you, Barbara, for what you just said. And we have a rich heritage, which we reflect on. We also have a future, and we determine the future. We decide what our future is going to be. We, the people, have important responsibilities, not only to ourselves, to our families, to our neighbors, but to the rest of the inhabitants of the planet. There are very important dimensions of issues that face us, and we should act on each one of them responsibly. Yes, we are very proud to be Americans, and the manifestation of this pride is to take responsible action so that the generations after us will enjoy what we currently enjoy and even be as proud as we are of being in the United States. Thank you, Barbara, for your comments.
Thanks, Barbara. I think one of the most inspiring, in a way, for me, times on the 4th of July was I was on a tour, leading a tour in England, and with WPR listeners, Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, just a fine group of people. And I think it was it Jefferson's home, who was in England for a long time. We had visited there, and we came out of there, and we had a couple of good singers, and so we all sang some patriotic songs on that day, and it was really a lot of fun being in London and singing those songs.
On the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And how did your British hosts react to that?
Fine. they enjoyed it. Well, you can join in, too, with your questions and comments. We can talk about your experiences, or maybe you have questions about fireworks or other science questions, too. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Malik Anderson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network as we visit with UW Professor of Chemistry Bassam Shakashiri. He comes by every so often to talk with us about science and what's going on in science. Today we are zeroing in on the 4th of July and fireworks associated with it. He's explaining how they work. And, of course, answering questions that you may have. So I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Love to hear from you. Ernest in Vernon County up next. Thanks for calling, Ernest.
Good morning, gentlemen. Something that caught my interest in a news feed that passes, you know, as you're looking at Facebook, they feed. A town in Italy has switched to silent fireworks to reduce the anxiety in animals. It's rural where I'm at, and it puts a lot of stress on this, our pets and horses and dairy cows and all the stuff that's in Wisconsin. Plus, we have returning vets that have suffered some traumatic experiences, and I just thought I would pose a question about how a silent firework would work and whether this could become a trend.
You know, Ernest, I saw that headline too. I have not read the article itself. It is, of course, of interest to me, and so I really don't know much about it. I saw that the headline said, you know, silent fireworks. And this is when I was coming back to the United States. I'm going to look that up. And, you know, Ernest, I promise you, like I always promise the listening audience, I'll put that on something about it on my website. And, in fact, I'd like to invite everyone to visit our website, www.scifun.org, scifun.org, where we have a full explanation of how the fireworks themselves work, how they're put together, the kinds of things I was going through very briefly here. And and once I learn more about the silent fireworks, we're going to add that in that particular location. So if you go to scifun.org on the far left-hand side, you click on the chemistry, the science of fireworks, you'll find much more information than I was able to share with you here. And that's where we will add, once we learn more about it, what this silent fireworks is all about. So I'm sorry I don't have any more information than that.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And in fact, silent, there are many fireworks that go up are not totally silent, but there might be a little poof or something like that. And not really loud. They don't all have to be loud. So
no, they're not all loud. No, but that's why I'm curious about this. I really just saw the headline there. So the other interesting thing about fireworks is that we have this in the description on the web. You can tell how far it is from where you are by watching the light and then counting until you hear the sound. And there is a very simple formula that you use that tells you roughly. So, for example, if the fireworks are being set right across Lake Mendota, for example, mm-hmm. as they used to be, and we're at the Union Terrace watching them, you could see the flash because light travels faster than sound. And then when you hear the sound, after you count 1, 2, 3, 4, then you can tell how far this was.
How many seconds has to go by per mile?
Well, that's what the formula is all about. So you can look that up.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much again for that call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post the question on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. You know, I was... I think the dangers of fireworks was brought to mind, was it last year? It's been within the last 12 months where a National Football League receiver lost a finger, I believe, or maybe a thumb. Finger, I think. Because he was using fireworks and he lit one and it went off right away.
Fireworks are to be handled by professionals. We enjoy what the professionals do when they put the fireworks together and when they set off the display, you know, in big shows. Sparklers, you know, some people say they're harmless. They're not harmless. They give off light, but if you're not careful and you touch it, then you get a burn. In fact, if you go to the website, siphon.org, and click on fireworks, you will see a slow motion video of how the sparkler works.
Which, oh, cool.
We just added that very recently. So the noise aspect is of concern, as the caller said, for human beings, but also for animals. I know our dog, we always have to keep our dog away from the loud noise that the fireworks set off. So we have to be very careful about that.
But I actually had a friend step on a sparkler that had, it was over, but they throw a lot of heat, and the person was barefoot and burned the bottom of their foot, really a good one, because the sparkler had just gone off, you know, quit.
Yeah, but it's on a metal rod.
Yeah, and those rods get hot.
They get hot, and they can cause serious burns. So be careful. Enjoy the celebrations, just be cautious about what's going on.
You know, I wanted to ask you about helium. There was a recent story about a helium gas field that was discovered in Tanzania, apparently a huge field. What is it about helium? Why is helium so important?
Well, helium is important for a variety of reasons. It's used in magnetic resonance imaging devices. It's used in scientific research. Most of us know about helium because we have helium-filled balloons.
Yeah.
Helium does not burn. Mm-hmm. This discovery just happened recently. Indicates that there could be large supplies of helium trapped underneath Tanzania. Helium is a product of the radioactive decay of uranium and thorium. So all the helium that's on Earth has been formed already. You can't make helium. As an aside, Larry, helium is the only element that was not discovered on Earth. It was discovered in the spectrum of the sun. And in fact, the original thinking was that it was a metallic element. That's why it ends in IUM, like sodium, potassium, chromium, all these metals. But it's a gas. It's an inert gas. It does not burn. It does not combine with other elements. But it's very useful for cooling the huge electromagnets in magnetic resonance imaging devices. It's also used in any device that has electromagnets. That includes the large hadron experimental devices that are in Europe. And the cost of helium has shot up recently, but maybe this new discovery will help bring the cost down again. So the helium is trapped in rocks and
inside rocks or between?
And so when there's volcanic action, when there's heat, then the rocks are shaken. They just
they
broken
release.
Up, and the gas is released.
So you collect the rocks and then agitate them, and then somehow.
That's the basic idea. Yeah. So what? In order to, if this discovery is going to work, then the shaking and the breakup of the rocks has to happen underground, and then the gas is released and it's captured.
So
helium also is found along with natural gas. So wherever there are deposits of natural gas, they have found helium. Mm-hmm. And it's the component that does not burn. So the natural gas burns, and then, in fact, this is how they discovered it a long time ago in some place in Kansas. The gas that was released, not all of it burned, and so they then realized that it was helium.
Very, very interesting. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Last time you were here, we talked a little bit about changes in tenure for UW staff and faculty. And combined with budget cuts, this has led to some people leaving.
You know, Larry, Wisconsin faculty and staff are always in demand.
Mm-hmm.
We have very high quality personnel. Unfortunately, the recent changes in the state constitution and certain action that's taken by our elected political leaders have greatly affected the morale of the faculty and the staff. And so there's been an increase in the number of people who have taken jobs someplace else. But the conversation, I think, is mostly about the role and the mission of the University of Wisconsin system, the role and the mission of UW-Madison, and the connectivity between the institution and the immediate community, that is, the state of Wisconsin. So we basically, the university has a social contract with the state, with the citizens of Wisconsin. And the citizens of Wisconsin should have high expectations of what the University of Wisconsin is and what it does for them. So,
Wisconsin idea.
The Wisconsin idea, yes. And the manifestations of the Wisconsin idea and living the Wisconsin idea. And connectivity, you know, means that both sides are talking with each other. It's not one side talking to the other. So I'm a strong advocate of reaching out and connecting in meaningful ways with young people in our state, with their parents, with their families, with the business community, with our farmers, with everyone, so that we truly are the embodiment of their hopes, their aspirations, and the embodiment of putting the research that goes on at our institution to advance knowledge and to serve society. To me, that is the purpose of the university and the research that we do, advancing knowledge, serving society. Of course, we're also engaged in teaching, classroom teaching, non-classroom teaching, and you know, when you teach something, you learn more about it.
Oh, for sure.
And you know that as a classroom teacher. You also know it, Larry, as a great public servant. That's the third leg of the stool, public service, and that's what the Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Television are all about. It is to enhance the quality of communication between the institution and the citizens. Now, the morale of the faculty has been affected. And, you know, some of the comments that we hear from our elected officials are not very promising, not very encouraging. So both sides have to improve the quality of the discourse. And it is critical that UW-Madison remains a world-class university and not, as some people are saying, becomes a vocational institution. So the call should be for the faculty to do more in connecting with the citizens of Wisconsin, and the citizens of Wisconsin should express their needs and their desires. It's a two conversations are always two way. Otherwise, it's a monologue. And so I am concerned about some of my colleagues who are leaving us. I am concerned about the transformations that are happening, in part because of fiscal reasons, but also in part because the nature of the institution itself is changing. I'm very hopeful that the regents, the governor, the legislature will work closely with us as much as we want to work closely with them to help define what the institution is, what it stands for, what it wants to achieve. And that requires respectful conversations. That requires expressing differences of opinion, avoiding name calling, but it really has got to be a positive, constructive series of conversations. And the chancellors and the deans and the faculty and the staff and the students themselves, the institutions are here for the students, should be participating in this, Larry, as quickly and as deeply as possible.
Well, we have some more questions about science, Sam, so let's take another call. Mark in Madison up next. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you, Larry, and thank you, sir, for being a guest. I'm going to ask you a question that relates to my lack of ability to remember high school physics and chemistry. So when you say we can't create helium, we can create hydrogen out of water. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's because we decompose the water. So, yes. So water is a substance that's made up of oxygen and hydrogen. If we decompose it, we get hydrogen gas and an oxygen gas.
Now, hydrogen and now helium is H1, right?
No, the symbol for helium is HE.
HE. Right.
HE. That's
so
helium.
What's the difference atomically between hydrogen and helium?
Well, the atomic number for hydrogen is 1.
Yep.
The atomic number for helium is 2. So that's, the atomic number is the unique differentiating part that tells us the difference between one element
right.
and the other. So,
right.
So they're both gases. In the periodic table, they're, close to each other, but their properties are very different. So hydrogen combines with oxygen. It can, it burns. It can be explosive. Helium, helium is unreactive.
Yes, and is there no way with fusion or fission or any of the other reactions that we know to be in science, there's no way to create helium whatsoever is what you're saying, right?
Well, not that the elements have been created already.
Right. I mean, we can't create any more, right?
No, we can't. We cannot make helium. Now, and there are fusion reactions taking place all over in the sun and elsewhere in the universe. But the amount of helium that we have on Earth has already been created, so we just have to find ways to recover it. It's trapped. It's the product of the radioactive decay of the element uranium, and also the element thorium. And and now when the helium gas is liquefied, then it that's how we use it in cooling electromagnets and. And in the devices that require very cold temperatures. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And also, the one other question I had was, I remember reading a story where there was a concern that helium was becoming somewhat rare to find, hard to find, maybe a shortage. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what this new discovery is. Hopefully, will help us with. By the way, another interesting property of helium in that a laser that's made of helium and neon. These helium neon gas lasers are used to scan the barcodes at supermarkets.
Huh?
So.
Cool.
You know, the ingenuity that we have as a result of the discoveries that we make, the properties of these substances, the advances in technology, they all can end up helping society. And that's another example of the helium neon laser is used, as I said, to scan the barcodes at supermarkets.
Very interesting.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, sir, and thank you, Larry.
Yeah, bye. Thank you for calling. Yeah. Appreciate your call. We have, Britain has voted to leave the European Union. Any thoughts on your part about what effect this might have on science and education funding in Europe?
You know, Larry, I'm an optimist, but this historic vote that was taken last week in the UK is going to have hopefully I'm wrong, it's going to have undesirable effects on the pharmaceutical industry, on the chemical industry. The economic conditions are going to get tougher. The British pound has dropped considerably. So the UK's decision to leave the European Union is going to have a significant impact on science, and the impact is going to be on funding for science. It's going to be on the ability of people from the European Union to work with scientists from the UK, and of course, collaborating with the rest of us on the international scene. So the UK chemistry enterprise, I think, is going to be under some stress. Now, we don't know what the time scale is going to be for this.
Yeah.
We don't know how it's going to play out politically. Time will tell, but in my opinion, at this time, it's going to have not a good effect. It's going to have an adverse effect.
Well, turning to something that will not have an adverse effect, I want to go back to Saturday, July 2nd, from 8:15 to 9:15 p.m. Science is fun at the Union Terrace. That's, of course, in Madison on the UW campus. And Bassam, just tell us again what you're going to be doing.
We invite everyone to join us to celebrate Independence Day by learning about the joy of science, by enjoying music played by the members of the UW band under the direction of my colleague, Professor Michael Lacrone. My colleague, Rodney Schreiner, will be also there, along with others. We have an out-of-town guest coming from Chicago. His name is Lee Merrick. He is the one who was... Who had taken the youngsters on the David Letterman show, Kid Science. So he's coming from Chicago. We have our own chemistry demonstrations staff. We're going to be doing a lot of experiments. There are going to be reasonably loud noises. There are going to be controlled combustion experiments. There's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to explain and demonstrate the chemistry and the science of fireworks. It's going to be a grand time, as it has been, continues to be, for us and for the people who come. So please join us beginning at show up at 8 o'clock. We're going to start at 8:15, but show up at 8 o'clock. And some of the experiments are going to be good for daylight, but then when it gets dark, some of the other experiments are going to be good for nighttime. So. And bring Emily, Larry.
All right. Bassam, thank you so much. Always look forward to your visits. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
And you can go to our Facebook page. We got links to lots of the things we've talked about, including the scifund.org website that Bassam hosts. It's always a lot of fun to go to that site. I can tell you, there's so many good experiments and everything else that you can have a lot of fun with that site, believe me. Oh, man. Well, coming up, we're going to turn our attention to health and men's health and urology. Dr. David Pallone, associate professor in the UW Department of Urology, our guest. And he specializes in erectile dysfunction and stone surgery, urologic care. So we can talk about all those things and more next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.